America was founded on the premise of self-evident truths. The founders pledged to each other, with God's help, everything they had for the support of their Declaration of Independence. But today, a form of cultural Marxism has infiltrated the halls of government, the military, the schools, the media, the corporations, even some churches. Meanwhile, should Christians be involved in politics? The woke essentially say, well, if we do, we're supposedly guilty of something like Christian nationalism or the like. Neil Mammon is a Christian apologist and an author of two books. He does not agree with the woke agenda. One of his books is called Jesus Was/Is Involved in Politics. Why aren't you? Why isn't your church? Neil Mammon joins us now on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Neil, we welcome you back to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. What an honor to be back.
Sure. Explain to us what the woke agenda is, and then we'll talk about the church and getting involved in the political process, especially to try and, you know, save as much of America as we can, what's left.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, the woke agenda is actually a combination of multiple things. I mean, at the root of it is basically a socialist/Marxist origin. As somebody who grew up in a Marxist family, surrounded by Marxist cousins, and had a dad who was an atheist and a Marxist till he became a Christian, one of the objectives of the Marxists has been to take over America. But they realize they can't take America back directly on a frontal assault, so they have to do it from inside. So what the woke agenda is actually back to the 1930s, when the Frankfurt Institute at Columbia University, these were a bunch of socialists that escaped to America from another socialist, the Nazi Party, the National Socialist Party. They disagreed on some principles, and Hitler was not kind to them, so they left. Their goal was to bring in basically evil into America, and one of the first attacks would be the church. The other one would be the family, and then, of course, the educational system. And they've achieved much of this. And so what that means is you're going to start infiltrating wokeism. What they call wokeism is, you're woken up to this, is things like homosexuality, transsexualism, socialism, almost anything ism that you can bring into critical race theory, which is liberation theology, which is, again, a Marxist doctrine to mutate the gospel. So that's basically what's happening. We're seeing all those fruits come to pass. And understand, this was started back in the 1930s, when they infiltrated or planned on taking over the school system. John Dewey was the guy who was co-author of the Humanist Manifesto. He was in charge of many of our schools and actually took over the entire educational system. So we see all that now to fruition.
The Humanist Manifesto, by the way, written in the 30s, and then they kind of updated a little bit in the 70s, mm-hmm. but the same basic
Human
stuff.
Manifesto too, yeah.
Yeah. What year was that? 19?
I don't remember when it was updated, okay. But it was originally written in the 30s, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was updated in the 70s.
Right. And so anyway, bottom line is, one of the lines in that, I remember reading it and even quoting it in some of the books we've worked on and so forth, where no deity will save us and so forth. But I'd like to hear a little bit about your own personal background. You say you grew up predisposed, or even being taught by your dad about Marxism. What was that like? And then how did you end up coming to the opposite conclusion?
So what's interesting is, my dad was an atheist and a communist. We had three famous atheist Marxist leaders in our family, my uncles.
And was this here in America, or was this?
No, this is in India. So we're Indian origin. I was born in Africa. I was born in Ghana. But I have come from a well-known family in India, and their focus was, interestingly enough, the first generation, the generation before my father's generation, were all Christians and lay leaders in the church, and very noted for their activity in moving away from a Marian doctrine. So there was a move to get our Marthoma church, which is the Indian church, into adopting Catholic principles, and my grandfather fought against that, started a new evangelical version of the Marthoma Church, Church of St. Thomas, very active in that. But then his kids, his generation, got into, because that was in the 50s, Marxism was taking off in China and in the Soviet Union. It was a big thing. So they got involved in that. And one of my uncles actually was chairman of the World Council of Churches, which, as you know, is one of the biggest promoters of liberation justice, which is, again, Jesus didn't come to save us from our sins, but he came to redeem the oppressed physically in this time. So a lot of background there. But eventually my dad did become a Christian. But he continued to be socialistic. So I grew up a very socialistic mindset.
Let me just understand. You're saying that you were growing up in Africa, in Ghana.
Yeah.
Okay. From an Indian family background. Okay.
Yeah. Not only Ghana, but Jamaica, Sudan, Ethiopia. My dad was a professor in physics, so we would go to these different countries and live there while he taught.
Sure.
And so I had the privilege of growing up in all these wonderful places.
So then how did your dad become a Christian?
My mom was always a Christian, and so she'd been praying for him constantly. And at some point, God revealed himself to my dad, and he accepted Christ. We didn't see a disparity between socialism and Christianity. Mm. And I tended to be very socialistic in my view. You know, I thought the government was the solution and made sure that I wanted the government to bring equity and all that until I came to the States. And I came to the States and I started losing arguments against some American coworkers and American friends. And after I lost a whole bunch of them, I said, wow, these guys really have solid logical responses that I had never thought about. And then funny enough, there was a junior high kid. I was a junior high counselor at the church, and the junior high kid said, hey, you should listen to this guy on the radio. He'll knock your socks off. I'm like, what's this guy's name? So here's a junior high kid, probably about 12 years old, got me to listen to Rush Limbaugh for the first time. That was the beginning of the end of my socialism.
Oh, that's interesting. So you had a skull full of mush, so to speak, but yes, you didn't end up with a skull full of mush. No, that's interesting. What would you say? I mean, it seems like Marxism and socialism, you know, by other names, are making inroads in our churches, but it's being done in the name of fairness, even almost in the sense of, well, this is Christian love, you know. Exactly. Jesus said we should help the poor, you know, what's wrong with you, you know, opposing this? Why are you opposing this?
Absolutely, and that's one of the big arguments I make in the book, is I explain how that's not what Jesus taught. And the way I teach is I just say, look, and somebody came onto my Facebook and said, hey, Jesus fed the poor, healed the sick, he was a socialist. And I said, wait a minute, I think you're missing something. And I tell the story, let's understand, we got the idea of taking care of the poor from the parable of the Good Samaritan. And so I joke, I say, okay, so here's the story of the parable of the Good Samaritan. There was a guy who got beat up, and then a Good Samaritan came by, found the guy beat up, took him to an inn and said, here is half the money. Because I want everyone to be fair, I want you, Mr. Innkeeper, to cough up the other half of the money. And then people go, no, that was not the story. I said, you're right. That's not the story. The story is that the Good Samaritan said, here's half of the money. I'm going to come back with some guys with big sticks. They're going to beat up all your neighbors, collect the other half of the money from the neighbors and give it to you. And everybody goes, no, that's not the story. I said, you're right. That's not the story. Here's the real story. The Good Samaritan said, I'm going to give you half the money, then I'm going to come back with IRS agents with guns, and they're going to tax your neighbors and threaten to put them in prison if they don't pay the other half of the money. And everybody goes, no. I said, exactly. What did he say? He said, I will give you the rest of the money voluntarily. Jesus said, you give to the poor, don't force your neighbor to at the threat of an IRS agent's gun. And that's the difference between socialism and the church. The church, Jesus said, the church is supposed to take care of the poor, not somebody else. And the church has done an excellent job of doing that for the last 2,000 years. We started the first orphanages, the first hospitals, the first, even the first inns were started, in the sense that the first inns for travelers who were sick and things like that were all started by Christians. I don't mean the first inns like for business travelers, but in for people who were sick. And these were all started by Christians who went out and obeyed God. In fact, in Rome, when the plagues would come through, the Christians would go out and collect all the people who were dying of the plague, and they would treat them. Yes. And most often they would survive, because the biggest problem with the plague was not that you would die of the virus. The biggest problem is you would die of dehydration, or you would die of something or the other. And the Christians would tend to them. And then guess what? When these people survived, when the next plague came through, they were immune to it because they'd already been through it. And so the Christians started growing and growing and growing. And this is something that most people forget. But that's what we're supposed to do. And take care of the poor, not ask our neighbors to take care of the poor.
Sure. Since you live in America, this is now your adopted home, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Well, how do you feel about America's founders, and what would you like to say about that, since Marxism is at war with America as founded?
Absolutely. And here's one thing that we forget. Let's talk about Christian nationalism after I mention this, because I think it's all going to fit in. One of the things that we forget is we think, and I play a game with when I do a sermon or a presentation. I ask everybody, do you have constitutional rights? Well, most of the audience raises their hands and says, yes, we do have constitutional rights. And I said, no, you don't have constitutional rights. You don't have constitutional rights because the Constitution doesn't give you any rights. In fact, you can read through the entire Constitution. It doesn't give you a single right. What it is a list of negative rights that the government does not have. The government may not do this. The mayor shall not infringe. So the government shall not do this. It's a limitation on government. The Constitution doesn't give you any rights. Why? Because what does the Declaration of Independence says? It says you already have these rights. You are given these rights by the Creator.
Right.
And then it says these are self-evident. Why is it self-evident? Well, let's look at this. So let's say I think that I have rights given to me by the government. Well, the government can take it away then. So then they're not inalienable. An inalienable right means nobody can take it away.
I
can't even give it away.
We have 3 minutes left. Keep going.
Okay.
3 minutes left.
So real quick then. So the rights have to come from somebody who has authority. I can't give myself rights. I can only give myself rights if I have authority over you. So, but more than that, I can't tell you to take care of somebody else or to be nice to somebody else because I don't have authority over you. The only person who has authority over every single human being, the person who has authority over Hitler, the person who has authority over slave owners, and tell the slave owner, take care of the, you can't have slaves, or tell Hitler, you can't kill the Jews, is somebody who has authority over Hitler and the slave owner and every single human being. Well, who is that? Well, that has to be the creator of every single human being. And right there, we just got to the concept of inalienable rights from a creator. And that's why the Declaration of Independence says these are self-evident. We got to it logically. But now here's where it's most critical. And let's talk about Christian nationalism. People say, oh, you're Christian nationalism. Well, let me explain something very important. I've lived all over the world. My best friends were Hindus and Muslims and Buddhists and Zoroastrians and all these things. I've lived around those and I've studied their religions. I've become an expert in most religions. And there is no single religion in the world that says all men are equal except for Christianity. So you want to talk about Christian nationalism? It is only Christian nationalism that tells you that all men are equal. If you don't have that Christian part of that nationalism in your nation, you're not going to have equal rights. You're going to have tyranny. Look at every other nation in the world. They don't have equal rights because they don't have a God that gives them equal rights. It's only Christianity that says that. And even then we had to fight for it because the British didn't believe in that. The French, the Belgium didn't believe in that. It's only the Americans who figured that out and said, look, we're going to codify this into our first national legal document, and that was ratified by all 13 colonies, and that's the Declaration of Independence.
Wow. Well, we have 1 minute left. I will say this. Some of the people that are criticizing Christian nationalism, I think what they do is they're basically saying, don't worship, America. Okay, fine. Next. No Christian should be an idolater of any kind. Okay, 40 seconds to close. Should we be involved in politics?
Absolutely, because Jesus was. Jesus was not a Roman citizen. He was a Judean citizen. His politicians were the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And he talked to them all the time. He fought with them all the time. And he talked to them about matters of the law all the time. Jesus was involved in politics. And if we are not, we're heartless and cruel. Because it's only because Christians were involved in politics that we stopped racism, we stopped slavery, we stopped gladiatorial combat, we stopped the burning of women and their husband's funeral pyre, the killing of twins superstitiously in Africa. We've changed thousands and thousands of laws, including child prostitution. Now, you tell me that we should not be involved in politics. How heartless can you be to allow child prostitution, temple prostitution to continue and not care about it?
Yeah, or transgender mutilation for these kids.
Intro of kids, yeah.
Yeah. Everyblm.com, everyblm.com is Neil Mammon's website. Neil, thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate you having me on.